and welcome to the Houston Innovators Podcast. I'm Natalie Harms, editor of Innovation Map. My guest for today is Veronica Wu, founder of First Byte Ventures. Veronica, who has decades of tech and investor experience, made the move from Silicon Valley to Houston to launch her new VC firm and to focus specifically on early stage startups within the synthetic biology space. Veronica joins the show today to share why now is the time to invest in SynBio, and why Houston, with its health and energy sectors, is the place to do it. Veronica, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
I'm excited to talk to you because you have a career across tech companies like Apple, Tesla, and Motorola, and now you're here in Houston. So I guess just to start, tell us a little bit about your career expertise across these businesses in the tech world.
So most of my career, actually, I have picked a non-obvious path, let's put it that way, that later on became obvious. I grew up in the academia family, but in the third year of my PhD candidacy, I decided that I wasn't going to be teaching. It wasn't something of my calling. I wanted to actually see real world impact, and that's when I chose management consulting and joined McKinsey & Company back then in actually the China office, which was actually a small office back then. And this was late 90s, and a lot of people still hadn't been as excited about China market at that point. And of course, and when I joined, moved from Motorola to Apple, it was the same thing. Apple was a $30 billion company, I remember, and China actually market was a $300 million market for Apple. This was before the phone days. And when I joined Tesla, I think Tesla was a $70 billion company as well. So a lot of my career is really about looking for the next thing. And one of the things I found is I have a strong passion for building and scaling big ambitions or innovations. When I see the opportunity, it gets me excited, and I love technology. And one of the reasons I have a passion for technology is how it constantly changes and pushes the boundary for new things and makes our lives better, as well as creating tremendous value. And it constantly changes business models. So it keeps us on our toes in the way. So I think I enjoy the intellectual exercise as well as the building and actually delivering the impact.
It's very exciting to hear you describe how you like to get in on the ground floor, right? And you recently relocated from Silicon Valley to Houston last year. So what led to that decision to make that move, and what's the transition been like for you?
One of the things, and this is related to synthetic biology and why I picked synthetic biology. In many ways, synthetic biology is now that we finally, as humans, we've learned so much about biology. We're finally have the tools, as we see in COVID, we're able to engineer organisms and cells to deliver unique new attributes to whether it's for vaccination, to target specific cells, or it's actually for our physical world in terms of delivering materials that traditionally that comes from a chemical process. Now we could systematically produce, certainly engineer through a biological process to produce some of that. And nowadays, as this technology has scaled and matured, we're now able to potentially produce it at even better cost and better purity and quality than traditional chemical process, while we're reducing the negative environmental impact. So when I looked at Houston has some two strong industries. One is medical, as we all know, with Texas Medical Center and incredible resources that Houston has. And the other one is even more well-known probably to the rest of the world, is the energy sector, both of which have tremendous both opportunities and challenges for us as humanity. When we look at the energy transition, that we are looking at decarbonization, that because obviously as humans, we cannot live without energy. However, is there a better, cleaner way for us to create and collect that energy for our sustainable growth? And then as well, the other thing is health and diseases that threatens us as, you know, as humans. Can we develop, and we have MD Anderson right here with incredible cancer resources. These are diseases that are taking lives. Can we actually develop better therapeutics and in areas where we can address some of these diseases? And it's not just cancer. There's other diseases that we still, like Parkinson and other things that we don't know today how to treat or cure these diseases. Synthetic biology actually offers the potential to develop methods to allow us to do that. And I see Houston with its tremendous resources and talent that already existing with these industries really has that potential to leverage the technology and become an innovation leader in this particular area.
I think before we get too much deeper into it, I'd love to know your bare bones definition of synthetic biology for someone who might not have really heard about this field and the potential within it.
Well, think of synthetic biology as a way, a cell programming, like we can program the software in the virtual world. Synthetic programming, synthetic biology is really now we're able to program our physical world. And we can develop cells based on engineering and manipulate the cells to create new attributes as we, and in fact, if you think about the very traditional way of synthetic biology, you can think of beer fermentation as a process of creating something through a biological process. And that's kind of the way that we're looking at synthetic biology, which is we can engineer cells with new attributes and use biological process as the manufacturing process to produce new materials.
Very exciting. I love beer, so I love that I'm a part of synthetic biology by being a consumer of beer. That's really interesting. So, of course, you launched First Bright Ventures here in Houston to invest in companies working in this space. So when did you decide this was something you were going to do, and what were those first steps to making this venture capital firm a reality?
This took about a year. I started by having conversations with Ginkgo Bioworks, which is one of the largest platform now in synthetic biology. One of the things that we have seen how technology in biology has really changed is if you think about sequencing, cost of sequencing has dropped over 1 million times in the last 20 years. And that's faster than the Moore's Law, in fact. And that's because the combination of the advancement technology and how we're able to automate and use machine learning to advance some of the algorithms that helps us to develop sequencing technology. And on top of it, really, one of the things we have looked at is also as we're discovering, as the cost goes down, we're discovering more and more cell mechanisms and cell properties, and as well as ways for us to target cells and target mechanisms to actually engineer those new attributes. So the combination of both the technology advancement and the basic understanding of biology has really come to a convergence to further accelerate the future development of synthetic biology. And then on top of that, what Ginkgo Bioworks really is doing is providing a platform that's also changing, I would say fundamentally changing the go-to-market for synthetic biology. Traditionally, think of the software world. Back in the early 2000s, before there was cloud, most of the software companies, you would have to buy server. You had to actually invest a lot of CapEx in server, in computer, in networking, to before you even start programming a software piece of application. Now, with the arrival of cloud, Amazon Cloud, now you don't need all of that and that CapEx. You can start developing your software and scale with the cloud as your demand of traffic and other things. Therefore, it becomes much more economical. Now, instead of needing $15, $20 million of investment, you only need a couple million dollars investment to get started. And that's what started the software revolution, if you will. Today, with a platform like Inco BioWorks, we're also offering synthetic biology companies, instead of $30, $40 million to get started with all the heavy equipment, both in terms of sequencing machines, which are really expensive, robotics that are very expensive, setting up labs. Synthetic biology companies are able to purchase that as a service and build a simple lab to get them started, but then use and leverage Ginkgo BioWorks automation capabilities and their labs to actually scale the production of their both the scale their technology and scale the production of their technology. So that those are things that allows a fundamental transition in terms of cost to start up a synthetic biology company. And this is, in a way, I see as a way to see even more synthetic biology companies and startups that will come into this space and therefore drive an explosion of new technologies that will emerge going into the future. And that's one of the first reasons as I got to learn about synthetic biology and work with Ginkgo BioWorks helped me to understand and have further conviction that this area will explode. Given the fundamental shift in paradigm. And we're seeing more platforms and other tools that are being developed to enable that process to be more efficient. That's one of the reasons I see an explosion of innovation that will come through synthetic biology, and as well as the costs are becoming more cost efficient or capital efficient that allows investment to actually create significant returns.
So within the firm in general, what types of companies are you looking for? How many companies are you looking to invest in? And what types of investments are you planning on making?
So first, I would invest in most likely pre-A companies, which really in technical definition, it's after proof of concept of the technology. So it's not just from a lab. There is actually some level of validation of the product and their technology at smaller scale. Now the company is ready to go for commercialization or ready to scale up for to demonstrate their production capability. And where FirstBite will help these companies is in the acceleration of their commercialization, both in terms of on the technical side. We actually work with Ginkgo BioWorks pretty closely. And if the company chooses to want to work with Ginkgo BioWorks, they can work. We can bring Ginkgo BioWorks to help them to look at from scaling their technology to also other relationship and networks that I can bring in terms of companies that may want to pilot the technology or may see market applications for the startups to, again, have a commercialization model to better determine what their final product and commercialization model will be.
I think something super interesting about your background and what has led up to this endeavor that you're on now is you have had several years of experience as an investor, over 300 startups you've been a part of investing in. So when you were making those decisions to invest in companies prior to this, what were you looking for in types of companies? Where did you typically tend to invest in? What types of industries? I'm interested in learning more about your experience as an investor.
Yeah, so I came into Silicon Valley with some capital from a Chinese private equity company, wanted to invest in tech in Silicon Valley venture. And this was back in 2015. And pretty quickly when I entered Silicon Valley, it was very clear that Silicon Valley was a very competitive space and the top venture firms were getting the top deal flows. As a newcomer with $200 million, it was almost impossible to be able to do that, to even get access to the top deal flows. Therefore, one of the things pretty early on that I decided is we actually couldn't use the traditional venture model to invest if we wanted to be investing in high quality deal flow. And everybody knows in venture, actually, part of the reason it's called venture is intrinsic nature of high risk. 80% of early stage companies actually die, especially seed, within 3 years. So if you're not investing or you don't have access to top quality deal flows, you might as well throw your money away. Right? So at that point, one thing that I did notice was this vibrant, and now I think we're seeing it many, many different places, is this vibrant angel network. And a lot of the angels are operator angels. What we mean by operator angels is people who actually have run companies and have either as senior managers at top companies or are serial entrepreneurs who have exited companies. These angels are actually the very earliest sort of partners, advisors to the next generation of startup. A lot of the startup founders tend to go reach out to them for their operational expertise to help them to build the company. Because startups actually, other than money they really need advices on how to build their business. And that's part of the reason why these angels get involved. And a lot of them have domain expertise and have the ability to actually work with the entrepreneurs for a period of time before they have their first institutional round. Therefore, they actually have a direct insight onto how good the entrepreneur is, how easy or how well they can be coached, how quickly they learn, and they have domain expertise in terms of whether they believe the market, the opportunity, the technology. However, when that first institutional round comes around, they usually have access to that round, maybe a few $100,000 or 1 or 2% of the company, but they personally don't have that capital. And there was no way for them to monetize, no easy way back then to monetize that opportunity back then. So coming back, I had a lot of channel building experience working at Apple. I viewed that operator angel network as my channel network. So we were the first institutional player who came out and set up a fund that was $100 million, said to these operator angels that we'd be happy to look at their deals and put in $100,000, $200,000, whatever access they had into those deals if we like it, and pay them carry. This way, this allowed me to not have to build a large, massive team for deal flow, and yet still had access to high quality deal flow. And then I built an AI model that helped us to screen those early stage deals to basically do the first level of filter. I built an AI model that was predictive for C to A, likelihood of success, as a way to filter our deal flow. And then from there, after the first filter, we'll use then human diligence to do some further validation of that particular company and then decide to invest, whether we're going to invest. And when we do invest, we used an SPV structure to invest in the particular company behind the operator angel. So sometimes the companies don't even know that we are the backer of actually the company. We were happy to stay behind and be known as, you know, providing that capital to these operating angels to continue to allow them to partner with the founders to build the company. And that gave us an incredible ability to access a small percentage of higher quality companies, but a more number of those companies. So that fund, we invested in over 300 companies that way to get into, and 78% of those companies actually had follow-on rounds, which is a pretty stark difference from most of the companies die. So we did end up picking a lot of high quality companies, and that helped us to continue to be the partner to help them continue to grow those companies. That's where that's how we built that firm in a very different way on traditional venture.
Yeah, and you're bringing this into your new venture as well. So it's very exciting to hear how you navigated that. I think something interesting that you said that really resonates with Houstonians is the fact that synthetic biology kind of is at this intersection of two major industries that are here in Houston. But I wonder your other observations on Houston as a emerging innovation hub. You know, how have you seen opportunities here in Houston? What are you excited to dive into?
I've actually found Houston to be a very welcoming city. Everywhere I've gone to be really frank, it's been incredible. I see a lot of people wanting to, who truly love Houston. I see a tremendous amount of love for the city with people, and also a tremendous amount of aspiration, because Houston used to be, you know, we launched our moon initiative here, right? So there's a lot of engineers, lots of incredible talent here. But there's also, I think people do recognize, and I want to say there's been some reservation in terms of innovation. I think investment in innovation, there's been a little bit of a comfort, I think, with the traditional industries, that there's less of that, traditionally has been less of that motivation, because building startups, building new companies is hard. It's never easy to start something new. And there has been somewhat of a reservation, I would say, and people have kind of told me there's less of that support, because so much of traditional wealth has generated from more traditional industries. But I think Houston is also really interesting in the sense of, I think Houston is changing. It's just like everything else is changing. When I was at a recent Texas Medical Center Innovation Center, in fact, we were talking about how many people are sort of immigrants, whether it's 5 years or 10 years. Most of us weren't born in Houston. We came to Houston. That is changing the culture and the people, I think. And there's now sufficient critical mass of those people that are open to new ideas. I think the incoming sort of people and population is also helping Houstonians to realize there's other opportunities. And so I feel Houston's also at a kind of an inflection point where there is more sort of passion or more desire to innovate and wanting to welcome that innovation, both from the inflow that we've introduced, Houston has had enjoyed in terms of talent that's coming in, but also itself in terms of as the people starting to see what innovation could bring again to sort of the vibrantness vibrance to the city, that I see a lot of excitement as well.
Yeah, very interesting to hear your observations so far, because I am a native Houstonian, so I can't even imagine like seeing the city with fresh eyes and what's happening here. So it's very exciting to hear your take on that. One thing I want to ask you, just because you've mentioned how you've always been in a role where you're ahead of the curve, and I wonder now being in ahead of the curve on synthetic biology with First Bite Ventures, what keeps you up at night? What are these things that you are very closely watching in within the industry that, you know, could really make a difference and an impact on the industry?
There are two things I would say that is probably really keeps me most up at night, I guess. One is I've had a lot of investors who, because biotech has traditionally had its failures as well. And the most recently known in the biofuel sort of failure where we couldn't prove we could produce, even though it was proven to be, this is a great alternative, but we couldn't actually make it economical enough, right? Until maybe oil hits $100 a gallon, then it could make sense. And the fundamental sort of, we need to understand whatever technology it is, it still needs to be economical. Doesn't matter at the end of the day, even though we all understand our environment and we all appreciate, but people, consumers will not pay 20 times for something, right? They kind of can't really see immediate results, right? So given that sort of experience, I think one of the biggest challenges now, it's still about, can we prove that we, with this new technology, we're now at a cost point that we can be cost competitive and even more efficient than the traditional. Not like, not only we're just promising that it's better in terms of environmental impact, but we're gonna be able to do this in a cost-effective way actually is economical and that makes sense and delivers end user benefits. So that's one thing I think it's still, is something every time I look at something, the it's the billion-dollar question, if you will. Is that really going to make money or be just another fad of a technology with promise but not going to be practical? And that's, a lot of it has to do with the scaling of this industry. And this industry is still nascent, just like we see software, right? So there's still a lot of bits and pieces and tools and shovels that needs to be built in order for this industry to eventually grow into its maturity and have make those pieces have to, there has to be investment in those pieces as well, not just in the fundamental technology. So driving this whole ecosystem to grow, not just a particular technology, that's something that I'm constantly, that's what's going to bring that cost up and make it economical, make the market, grow the market. So that's one thing. The second thing is just how long it's going to take, right? As we all know, investment is very much about timing. If you can be early or you can be too early, right? Or you can be too late. Timing is super important. I personally have the conviction, I think we are at a good time in the sense of, I think we've been through that first stage, as I refer to, of failures, trialing, and error. Now we have a critical mass of talent and knowledge now to scale this. But, you know, people all see it differently. And one of the things is definitely, if am I really investing at the right time? For either on the company specific basis and where they are that right before that inflection point, or am I investing too early? And there's not to say that, because at the end of the day, most investors, it's already early, which means, you know, as a venture fund, it's a 10-year return. So it's already going to lock up liquidity for a long time. Do they need to wait even longer? And that's another question that I constantly ask myself.
Timing, man. It's very, very important.
Yes.
Well, I've loved talking all this through with you. I think it's a very interesting field, and I'm very excited to see you put your faith in it and put your faith in Houston to be a part of it. So thank you so much for your time.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. Really nice meeting you.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Houston Innovators Podcast. Don't forget to hit subscribe so you don't miss next week's edition, and check out innovationmap.com for the latest Houston startup and innovation news.